Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of Forgotten Horror Classics. My name is Paul A. Presenza, known as the Moo Cow. Some of you folks might know me as one of the co-hosts for Indie Film Cafe, also the Criterion Watch and Film Freaks and a number of other things out there, too. But this is Forgotten Horror Classics, and this is a program where we take movies that have been either overlooked over the years or forgotten or have just kind of flown under the radar. Or in the case of this particular movie we're about to see, it's a movie that people in England might have seen, but most people in America have not. But first, I want to introduce to you my co-host for the evening.
I'm Lenore. Hi.
Hello, Lenore. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
All right. So tonight's movie we are going to see is from 1989, and it is the British television version of The Woman in Black. This is a story that was a book and a long-running play, and it's actually quite popular in England, but it actually came on ITV on Christmas Eve. Apparently there's a tradition in England on Christmas Eve to put out ghost stories, which I think is a fabulous tradition. I wish we had that sort of thing here. And this was a made-for-TV movie made in 1989, and it was broadcast Christmas Eve, 1989, and that was the only broadcast, apparently, except for once they went back and they rebroadcast it, I think, in 1994, and that's about it. And you could get it on DVD in England, but it was never released in the United States. So you had to sort of really, really either look for it internationally, or in my case, I happen to have a couple of friends who are very, very much into horror films who lived in England, and they said, you need to see this film. This movie is really scary. And these were people that I really sort of trusted their judgment when it came to horror films. So I found somebody who was willing to make a DVR or recorded DVD version for me, and I paid for it. And I every year on Halloween, because usually that's the one night of the year I like to show a good movie or a couple good horror films instead of the stinkers that I normally do. And I've been showing it to people, and just about everybody I've shown it to has just loved it. So that is the movie. We were going to go and check out some spooky sounds, and then we will come back and talk about The Woman in Black. So, Miss Lenore, what did you think of The Woman in Black?
I liked the movie a lot, but I'm also a bit confused on points.
Okay. Well, one of the things we'll talk about in the course of this program is what is confusing. Because I can understand, if you've never seen this before, it might be a little hard to follow, perhaps.
Yeah.
So what confused you specifically?
How many ghosts were there? Like, I know there was Alice, she's the one who died, and that triggered the whole thing. And her sister, and Nathaniel. And I guess they brought it up a little. Nathaniel was the son of the sister who was adopted by Alice.
Right. Well, perhaps it might be helpful if we kind of quickly go over the plot of the film.
Okay,
so the movie opens up with a young solicitor by the name of Arthur Kidd. And he's going into work, and his very, very stuffy senior, I guess, partner, CEO or owner of the company, Mr. Sweetman, in addition to browbeating poor Mr. Kidd, says that he has a special assignment for him, and he has to go to the Eel Marsh House and attend the funeral of Mrs. Drablow, who has passed away. And not only that, but he has to stay there for the course of a week and gather all of her personal and family sort of correspondence and papers and then settle the estate and then have the house sold. Now, of course, being a young family man, Mr. Kidd doesn't really want to do this, but Sweetman makes it clear and under no uncertain terms that his advancement in the firm depends on him doing this assignment. So he's got no choice. He has to go. So he resigns himself. We get to see him with his family a little bit, and they're a perfectly charming Edwardian couple. This is right after World War I. I think it's something like 1920, maybe 1919, something like that. I never really put a finger on the exact date. But he takes the assignment, he gets on his train, and he goes up. And as he's going up, he ends up bumping into Sam Tuvey, who's the guy with the mustache and the I guess you'd call it a scarf all the time. And they start talking, and he recognizes Arthur Kidd for what he is right away. He's a London person going up, and he knows where he's going to. So he kind of gives him some cryptic information, and basically he's saying, you know, if anything happens or you run into some difficulties, feel free to contact me. And Arthur Kidd says, well, thank you, and he gets them all set up at the Clifford Arms Hotel. And then the next day, Kidd goes off with this guy named Kickwick, who has a trapping pony. And they ride the pony from town through this causeway to the Eel Marsh house. Now, there's no road that goes there. It's just this house is built on a spit of land off the coast. And the only way you can get there is this causeway, which is underwater most of the time. So that plus the fact that the mists are rolling in. I think they had a strange word for it. It was like the fraps, sea mist. And it can be quite dangerous because the tides come in quickly and the mists surround you and you don't know where you're going and you can't see anything. And apparently if you go off the causeway and into the marsh, you're just as good as dead. So it's hazardous. And so not only are you isolated, but it's a dangerous place to try to leave. So Kickwick and the pony take him out there and dump him in front of the imposing, beautiful old Victorian house, Eel Marsh house, and pretty much drop him off there. He gets the old-fashioned lights running for him. They're like electric, like one of the old hand-crank electrical generators, and goes off. And then Mr. Kidd starts going through all of the possessions, and he starts experiencing some very odd ghostly things. But I guess before all that, before he actually got there, he did go to the funeral, and he saw this strange-looking woman in black sort of in the background. And every time he mentioned it to somebody, nobody would acknowledge her. In fact, he was there with the other solicitor, and the guy wouldn't even look at her. He would just, like, turn his head and avert his gaze. So already something's not quite right, you know. And he also notices in the graveyard that there's a lot of graves of children there, which is also rather unsettling.
Yeah. That's one of the things I had questions about. No one tried to help the girl who was pinned down by the logs?
Right, right. And that also happens just before he goes. It's market day. And he is there sort of Johnny on the spot when one of the trucks gets stuck and its load of very large logs tumbles out the back and starts to crush this one gypsy girl. And he kind of comes in and grabs her at the last second, just before a whole bunch more came out and probably would have squashed her. So in a way, he kind of averts the dark lady's wishes. That's kind of what I was looking at it. And I think that's one of the reasons why her malevolence turns towards him. You know? Wait,
so that wasn't an accident? I thought no one was interfering because she was a gypsy.
That might be so, but I think the reason why it happened is because of her. Because remember, they say later on that anybody who actually sees her, a tragedy to a child soon happens, and pretty quickly. So
is the woman in black then can't be Alice then?
I'm not 100% sure about that. At this point, she's kind of just a harbinger of death in the sort of classic sense, you know, like a banshee or another kind of ghost. But we'll get into that.
Okay.
So these are the things that sort of happen beforehand, and Kid notices her a couple of times, but he goes out to the house and Kickwick dumps him there. And one of the first things he does is he notices that there's this old family cemetery sort of right there in the marsh, and he's checking it out. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, is this woman in black just kind of balefully looking at him with these horrible red eyes. And he's like freaked out. He's like, what the hell? And then she starts walking towards him, and he bolts and runs away and runs back into the house and locks it up and et cetera, et cetera. So he's already freaked out about it. And various other scary things start to happen to him. There's a room he can't get into, but he hears sounds coming out of it. So he's also hearing, in the middle of the night, he starts hearing another trap and pony clop, clop, clopping through the causeway, except this one, all of a sudden you hear a splash and people screaming, and it sounds horrible. And, you know, he looks out there, and there's nothing out there. So he's hearing these horrible, loud, ghostly sounds, and he's pretty much wigged out. So by the time the next day when Kickwick grabs him, he's ready to get the hell out of Dodge. He goes back, and he ends up bumping into Sam Tuvey, who offers him dinner. He goes there and he starts talking to him, and he starts sussing out some of the story behind what might be going on. And, you know, Tuvey already knows what's going on, although he doesn't let on so much. But he advises Kid not to go back to the house, but Kid decides he's got to because he's got a job to do. So he gives Arthur Kid his dog, Spider, his cute little terrier.
Yeah, Spider was adorable.
Spider was awesome. Gotta love that. And you know, that would have made me feel a whole lot better, too. You know, so, and then he decides he's going to go out there himself. He gets a bike, he takes a bunch of food, and he rides out there in the middle of the day and by himself with Spider. And same thing, he gets the electricity going again, and he starts going through some stuff, and then even more crazy shit starts happening. The room that he couldn't get into, he's now hearing bouncing noises coming from there, and he starts wigging out, and he goes to check it out, and there's a super creepy scene right there. I can tell you is it's really scary in some of the scenes. Go ahead.
Like the tin soldier?
Right, the tin soldier that keeps appearing. That's freaky, the little voice that keeps coming out of nowhere. A lot of freaky stuff, and then at one point the lights all go out and he really wigs out and he's looking for the I guess they call it a torch in England, and he finally finds it. He goes dashing through the house and he goes outside to get the electric lights back again, and just when he's feeling a sigh of relief, that's when there's a weird sound coming out of the marsh and Spider goes running off and just goes, and now he's all by himself.
Yeah, nope. I felt mad when Spider ran off. I was so glad when they said later that Spider was fine.
Right. And I'm sure he felt horrible about it. I mean, you know, he felt responsible for it. But also, he was his only companion out there, and things got a lot scarier. And as he's going through the possessions, he starts finding out more and more information about Mrs. Dravlow, a sister, I think you mentioned, and the kid. He starts putting pieces together as to what things might be. Stuff starts getting more and more spookier, and just when you think he can't handle enough of it, all of a sudden here comes Sam Tuvey back again and manages to grab him and pull him out of there and takes him back, and he's gotten himself sick. Yeah, I think he goes back up to show him the room, the creepy kid's room. You know, when he went up there the first time with the ball, the house or the room was all nicely made up and the bed was made and all the toys were arranged nicely. But when he goes back to show Tuvey, the place is all jumbled up and he's like shocked and he faints, and that turns into a chill. So they take him back to the hotel, and
then he almost dies
and fever. And he gets a very, very disturbing visitation.
Yeah. And that was something I was going to add is that scene, the woman looked older than the woman in black.
Oh, my goodness.
Were there like three, I guess, with the boy?
It's possible. I just know that people who know the movie refer to it as that scene. And it's definitely, I mean, the first time I saw it, it freaked the hell out of me. I can tell you that much. So he somehow manages to survive that. His wife shows up because they're worried about him. And she shows up, you know, tells him he's going to be okay. He gets better and they send him off. He goes back to work and he goes to Sweetman. And he knows Sweetman knows this, and he accuses him. He's like, that, you know, you sent me there because you didn't want to go there yourself, because you knew all along what was going to happen. And of course, the guy is just trying to deny it and blah, blah, blah. And he says, oh, by the way, the package or the thing you sent is here. Meanwhile, the junior partners have been like, yeah, some woman keeps hanging around. She's dressed like she's in a, you know, like a widow. And he already knows exactly who they're talking about. So he's like, just go away. And he's all freaked out that she's following him. And then he keeps finding the damn little soldier. So he decides in a moment of desperation to take all the stuff that's in the box. And he kind of half throws it into the fireplace and half of it's on the floor. And he dumps paraffin, which I'm not exactly sure paraffin is. I guess it's some kind of oil.
Oh, in the lab I work in, we use paraffin wax to seal stuff. Uh-huh. But the paraffin oil, that's like a side product of it, and it's really flammable.
Gotcha. It's
made from, I think, animal fat of some kind.
Okay. Well, he uses that, and he sets it on fire, and of course, he burns everything, but he also burns his entire office.
Yeah, that scene was frustrating. It's like, he has no concept of fire safety at all.
Right. Well, clearly at this point, he is wigged out to the maximum. So he goes home, because they send his ass home. And,
oh, yeah, he did kind of light the building on fire.
Right. And then his wife is like, okay, let's just kind of get away. And just, you know, nothing is stopping us. Let's just take a break. And they go off on a nice little rowing expedition on the Thames. And they seem to be having a nice time. And all of a sudden, there's the fucking woman in black again standing in the middle of the water.
I thought she was standing on it.
She's standing on the water, right. Standing on top of it, freaking them out. And just as he's about to, you know, react, a giant tree falls down and kills all of them at once. And just, boosh, the end. That was just insane.
Yeah.
My goodness. So a little bit about some of the folks who are involved in this production. Like I said, The Woman in Black was previously a book and a play. It was written by Susan Hill. Susan Hill is also the writer for this particular production, but Nigel Neal is the man who actually adapted the screenplay. The movie was directed by Herbert Wise. He's a veteran BBC director who did all kinds of stuff. So he directed episodes of I, Claudius and Upstairs, Downstairs, American Playhouse, just a whole bunch of stuff that BBC and PBS folks would know. He'd been directing since the 50s. Arthur Kidd, who's the main character, is played by a man named Adrian Rollins. He's also a guy who's been in a ton of BBC and British TV productions. This was one of his first big roles that he had. Most people would know him, or at least perhaps you might know him. He actually played James Potter in the Harry Potter movies. So I don't know if James Potter is Harry Potter's dad or who he is.
Yeah.
So did you recognize him?
I thought he looked familiar.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, he's in like all of them.
James Potter doesn't show up in the movies a whole lot.
Oh, okay.
I think he's in like two or three scenes.
He was also in a couple of Doctor Who episodes. I couldn't tell you which ones, but I know he's a Whovian. And then Sam Tuvey is the next guy, is probably in the movie as much as any other character. He's played by Bernard Hepton. Bernard Hepton's another veteran BBC British television actor. He's also on stage, and he appeared in all kinds of stuff. He was in the Laurence Olivier Richard III way back in the day. He was in Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon. He was in Gandhi. He was in a whole bunch of stuff, usually a character actor. But he was really, really marvelous, and he added a lot to the role. Josiah Firestone was played by David Decker. He was the other solicitor. He appeared in Time Bandits, and he is actually Kevin's father in Time Bandits. It's kind of weird. I hadn't even thought about that, but it wasn't until I looked back up and it's like, oh yeah, that's him. And then he was in a stinky movie that I have called I Bought a Vampire Motorcycle, of all things. But he's also been in a whole bunch of BBC and PBS stuff that's out there. The Woman in Black herself was played by somebody by the name of Pauline Moran. She has done a bunch of acting stuff, but she's also known as a famous astrologer over in England. So already the creep factor is kind of high for her. She's probably most famous because she is in the BBC production of Agatha Christie's Poirot. She plays a character by the name of Miss Lemon. So if you're familiar with that series, you would know her. And then the only other person I believe that had a name is Claire Holman. She plays Stella Kidd, that's Arthur Kidd's wife, the one who kind of tries to save him. And let's see, she was in a few TV things as well. I think the most famous thing that she was in, she plays Princess Marina of Greece and Denmark in the series The Crown. I don't know if you've seen The Crown. It's really, really good. And I think I alluded to earlier that this production was aired in Christmas Eve 1989, and then only once since then. And after that, you had to get it on DVD or, I guess, VHS in England, and was never released in the United States. Oh. So anyway, getting back to some of the confusion about the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think now about the ghosts?
I think there might have been two of them, because the one in that scene where Arthur is sick did look older than the other one.
Well, I agree with you. I think there are two ghosts. Clearly, the Woman in Black herself is some kind of spectral, awful, horrible, monstrous ghost of some kind. She seems to have all kinds of different powers, one of which is to manifest sounds that happened, I guess, years and years and years ago. The sort of ghostly sounds of the trapping pony going into the marsh and everybody drowning and screaming. That may not necessarily be a ghost in and of itself. I think that's just the sound, because it's always the same sound over and over and over. And I think, if you remember, the old lady, Mrs. Dravlow, was recording, I guess, her diary on those old wax cylinders. And he was listening, a kid was listening to them, and she says that she gets tormented in the middle of the night by hearing their demise. She said she has a way of making them remember or listen to their demise over and over and over again.
So the Woman in Black is not Alice Dravlow? Treadlow?
I think she is. She is the sister. She is. I just don't know who the person who is gross, something gross. I think maybe that may have been like a... also the sister's name, because the kid was born out of wedlock, so maybe she was trying to protect the family by having this other name. You know what I mean? It's a little confusing, and that's one of my little nits about this film that I pick at every now and again. I imagine the book is somewhat clearer.
Well, if Alice, she was married, she was a widow, so I guess she would have a different surname anyway.
Right. But Nathaniel is the name of the kid, so the kid seems to be a separate ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid, I don't know that the kid is necessarily malevolent. You know, the kid, you know,
seems pretty friendly.
Seems pretty friendly, seems kind of playful, but in a way, that makes it worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, he's like, hello? Hello?
Are you there?
Creepy as fuck in the middle of the night. And then he keeps insisting on giving the poor guy this tin soldier.
And he keeps saying, it's for you.
Right. No.
It seems like the kid, Nathaniel, just wants to play or share his toys, which actually is a little odd for, what, a six-year-old boy?
Yeah, something like that.
He doesn't sound six. He sounds older.
On the other hand, I think about the screaming from the trapping pony, those awful sounds. And to me, it sounded like there were three different people there. It sounded like there was the woman and the son, but I thought that there was a young girl as well.
I know. I kept thinking there was a girl there.
That's what I kept thinking. But I don't think there is. And then when Kid goes investigating in the papers, he finds two death certificates. He finds Alice's and he finds Nathaniel's.
Alice? I thought Alice was the older one, the one who died.
That's the sister, I believe.
Wait, I thought Alice was the name of the one who was the widow.
And right, the sister. The sister of the Dravlow woman who just died. Because remember, she keeps saying, I'm not going to be scared away from this house by my kin. That's her sister.
So wait, then the one who owned the house and adopted Nathaniel, what was her name?
I think that's Mrs. Drablow.
Alice Drablow and her sister then?
I don't remember if it's Alice or not. I don't remember the... I just know Mrs. Drablow, the one who just died as the movie opens up. Yeah, she ends up adopting them to I guess, keep her sister out of trouble. And then they end up both dying. What I also don't understand is apparently she, the sister came in and tried to grab the kid off the street. And that's how they got into the trap and pony. And then they went rushing back to the house. So I'm not really sure why that happened. I imagine they probably mentioned it, and there's probably in the book, but I'm a little confused about that. And that's why I said I wanted to talk about some of the confusion, because I wasn't sure what had happened and why it had happened and why what it was that drove them to go out into the marsh in the first place and get killed.
So wait, did Drablow already own the house when she adopted Nathaniel?
I think so.
Okay, so Mrs. Drablow's sister had Nathaniel out of wedlock. Drablow adopted Nathaniel as a baby and raised him in the house, and that's right. Why they had the nursery.
Right, exactly.
And then the sister, who was the one who gave birth to Nathaniel, came back and tried to take Nathaniel with her.
Right.
And then they died.
Right. And then, I guess, the spirit, the hateful, hateful, malevolent spirit of the sister is just keeps blaming her for what happened, and that's why she's haunting them.
Okay, so the homeowner's sister is the woman in black.
Right. And here's the thing. Clearly, the ghost doesn't just blame Mrs. Drablow. She blames everybody. So, because her vengeance isn't just on the family. Her vengeance is on everybody. I mean, they talk about how their cemetery is full of kids from all the different families. Turns out Sam Toomey and his wife had a kid that also died. And he comes back and says, yeah, you know, we're one of them as well. So this is a spirit that seems to have revenge on everyone. And I guess all it takes is for you to be noticed by her because, you know, that's why some of the townspeople, like the one solicitor, what was his name? Josiah. He keeps averting his eyes. He keeps acting as if she's not there because he doesn't want to be noticed by her. You know, and like the gypsy kids, remember the gypsy kids were all gathered around the stone wall and during the funeral, and the two solicitors were there, and the woman in black was there, and that's when he chases them away?
Oh, that's why he chased them away?
Right.
Okay.
Because they saw the woman in black too, and the woman in black saw the kids, and so that's one of the kids that nearly gets killed. And then Arthur Kidd prevents the kid from getting killed. I mean, she still gets injured, but prevents her from getting killed. And all of a sudden, now she's got him in mind, you know? And to make it even more creepy, it wasn't just like a traditional horror house where you go and you go, okay, the house is haunted, I just gotta leave. Oh no, that doesn't help. It goes back and screws with him when he's at the hotel. And then when he's home in his own house. And then when he's out in the river in the middle of nowhere. She's coming after your ass. This is a nasty ghost.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I really like this. I mean, this isn't just a, you know, boo kind of scary story. There is some serious malevolence going on with this particular ghost, and it's just creepy as fuck, in my opinion.
So then I have a question then, because they asked it in the movie too. When Nathaniel calls out for his mom when he's dying, is he calling out to his biological mother or his adopted mother?
Good question. I don't know. I think that's one of those open-ended, you know, questions that you could answer either way. I mean, you got to think that part of the malevolence from the sister may be that the son loved Mrs. Drablow as much or maybe even more than his real mother.
That does make sense. If he's calling out to Mrs. Drablow as his mother as he's dying, that would add to the malevolence of the ghost.
Right, so revenge and jealousy. But it's hard to tell. And, you know, like I said, the kid himself, his ghost, doesn't seem particularly malevolent or evil, just creepy.
Yeah, and I suspect that he's creepy more because you can't see him.
Right, I mean, you know, when the ball starts bouncing, you know, and he's downstairs and he hears thumping and he's like, what the hell's that? You have to wonder, is the kid doing this because he's just playing and he's reliving what he did when he was alive? Or is he doing this to screw with the guy in the house and frighten his ass? You know, it's a question. Every time he tries to go into that room, the door is locked, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He tries three or four times. Then all of a sudden, when he gets the axe and he's running up there to try and figure out what the heck the sound's coming from, the door is open.
Maybe it was open because there was a dog and he wanted to play with the dog?
It's possible. Either that or, you know, most of us who are frightened by this are like, he's trying to lure him in there so he can kill him. So that's one of the more frightening scenes, in my opinion. You know, poor Spider has gone in there because he doesn't care. He's a spider. He's a dog. And now he's got to go in there. And he's you could hear him, like, panting and being very, very scared, even though he's got an axe. And then one of my favorite scary scenes is that, you know, the bouncing has stopped. And he flips on the light and he looks around. And the first thing you see is the ball dropping. So let me ask you. If you are isolated in a scary old house full of dead people and spirits and you hear sounds and you go up into a room that was locked every time you've tried up until right now and a ball drops out of midair right in front of you, what are you going to think?
Actually, I have been in situations similar to that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm always pretty freaked out.
I would think so. I'd be very freaked out.
Yeah. To make a long story short, I pretty much grew up in a haunted house. Although, now that I think about it, I suppose it's more that my family was haunted and not the house.
Okay.
Because we moved houses a few times.
But, oh, and that didn't seem to help?
Yeah. Well, it's more like, we didn't move because of the ghosts, because they were always pretty friendly. But it was like, one of them was a little kid. It was a little girl, not a little boy. Hmm. And there was an older man who was named Benjamin. And I don't actually know what either of them did when they were alive.
Did they have anything to do with the haunted Pikachu?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is... Did you hear a whistle?
Nope.
Oh.
Don't freak me out here, kid.
Okay. So, the haunted Pikachu is this story within my family that happened when I was like 6 years old. And as a six-year-old, I really loved Pokemon. I had, like, there was a case next to the TV full of Pokemon VCR tapes. VCR tapes? Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, VHS tapes.
Yeah. I don't really remember a whole lot of Pokemon now. But as a kid, I loved it. Like, I'd insist on watching that every afternoon if I could. I also had a Pikachu doll that I was given 1 year, I guess as a Christmas present.
So is this like a hard wax doll or is it a stuffed animal?
It was a stuffed animal that could talk.
I see. But it could talk?
Yes.
Did it have like a little electronic thing, I'm hoping?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It said Pikachu or Pika Pika, and that was the only thing it ever said.
Okay.
Until we went on a trip to a place called Mystic Village. Mystic Village is widely considered to be haunted. We didn't know that at the time.
This is in Connecticut?
Uh-huh. So my sister and I, we spent the whole time playing with a little girl, and the little girl didn't have parents. We said, well, you can come home with us. You can share our parents.
Oh, that was wise.
Yeah. We were like 6 years old.
Oh my goodness.
So, and then the little girl just kind of disappeared. We didn't really see her after that. Until we got home, and then the Pikachu started saying stuff it wasn't programmed to say.
Like what?
It'd, like, activate at midnight, and it would say, will you play with me?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Around that same time, another ghost showed up at the house. We don't know who he was, but my mom assumes in hindsight that it was probably the little girl's father, the ghost of her father. And this went on for a while. The Pikachu would activate at midnight. It would ask us to play with it, and I would, which meant I didn't get a whole lot of sleep. That's, like I said, this went on for about a month before one day I forgot the Pikachu in the living room during a get-together my mom was having with my aunt. So around midnight, because they were talking, and I guess they were watching a movie or something, the Pikachu activates again and starts talking to them. And it's like, at first they don't do anything until they slowly look over at the Pikachu and it activates and starts asking them more questions.
Kill them. Kill them all.
So what happened after that is my mom found an exorcist.
Yep. As you do, of course.
Yeah. And had an exorcism. And the last thing the Pikachu said was, big guy feel good. Big guy was the girl's dad. What happened was the exorcist helped the little girl cross over and reunite with her ghost dad.
In theory.
In theory. For all I know, big guy could have been a demon or something. But anyway, after that...
I thought you buried the doll.
I did. After that, I was kind of creeped out.
I guess so.
So I took the Pikachu doll to the backyard and buried it. And, I mean, I really like Pikachu, I guess. I regret burying it a little.
Okay. Well, that's a fun little story. So, did seeing this movie kind of trigger you a little bit?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. But the little kid ghost sort of triggered me. I mean, that's just creepy as hell. But getting back to the film and getting back to the kid's ghost, Nathaniel, I don't think he was necessarily an evil ghost. I think he was just a kid.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Mommy, biological Mommy, was a nasty ghost. That's one of the nastiest ghosts I think I've ever seen in film.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the thing is that most people know this film because of the 2014 remake with Daniel Radcliffe. And as a matter of fact, I believe the writer, Susan Hill, was one of the people who wrote that film. I personally found it very disappointing. It wasn't nearly as good. It wasn't nearly as subtle. All the subtlety was sort of gone. It was all sort of jump scares and crappy CGI and, you know, just like a higher body count, you know. It's like it was more made for like an American teenage audience and not sort of an audience of intelligent adults who just kind of want to be creeped out. So I was fairly disappointed with it. I wouldn't say it was a terrible movie. I just, you know, it just doesn't come close, in my opinion, to the original. So because most people either don't know that this movie exists, or if they've heard of it, they can't get it anywhere. It's one of the reasons I like to trot this one out and show people, because most people I have shown have said, I mean, if they don't say it's scary, they say it's at least creepy as hell. And it is. It's a very, very effective movie. Unlike the remake, there is no weird CGI going here. I mean, there may be some camera tricks going on, especially with some of the mists and, you know, the way that the woman in black appears and disappears. There's that one scene where he's just gotten to the Eel Marsh house and he's been checking out the family cemetery, and there's nothing behind him, and you can see there's nothing behind him, and then he turns around and all of a sudden he stops and he's like feeling the back of his neck like something's wrong, and he turns around and there she is. Now, the camera has been in this direction the entire time. We've been seeing in that direction the entire time. So unless she emerges from the ground, I don't know where the hell she came from. And so he's freaked out. We're freaked out, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the things I noticed. The bird noises seem to precede all of her appearances.
The birds were amazing. And that's another creepy thing, too, is when you start to hear the trap and pony going in the marsh and everybody's drowning and screaming, it doesn't just end. It sort of blends into a bunch of seabirds screaming. So it makes you want to like question what it is that you're hearing. It makes it even more creepy because it's like, was I hearing a bird the whole time? And Sam Tuvey was, you know, even telling Arthur Kidd, he's like, you know, you might have been hearing birds screaming. And he was like, no, it can't be birds. He's like, you haven't heard a gull. You're not from around here. They can sound like babies or cats screaming in the middle of the night. And, of course, Kid's not convinced, but, you know. And, of course, when the trap and pony sound happens, clearly there's somebody screaming for his mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing ends with a whole bunch of bird noises blended into the screaming, too. So it's like both at the same time. Very effective. So that's one of the ones. I think we touched on the bouncing ball coming out of nowhere. We mentioned the creepy tin soldier that keeps showing up. It's like all of a sudden it's in his hand or it's in his pocket. or it's in his case. You know, it follows him home.
Yeah, I kept thinking, like, when he gave that souvenir to his son, I kept thinking that the son would open it and it'd be the Tin Soldier, and that isn't what happened. But I kept expecting it would happen and creep him out.
I know, and it's almost like the little boy ghost has pity on whoever the next victim is going to be of his biological mother, the woman in black, and that's like his way of trying to sort of comfort them a little bit. Because he doesn't give it to the kid because the kid's not in the woman's sight. Arthur is. Now, she ends up killing them all anyway, but I think it's originally because of what Arthur Kidd does by stopping the gypsy kid from being killed, you know? I mean, that's my theory. I've not read the book. I would love to read the book.
Although I suppose just by virtue of being Mrs. Drablo's solicitor might have gotten her attention.
Well, there's that too.
Which really makes me wonder, the boss knew he had children.
Oh, Mr. Sweetman. On it. Right.
Why would he send him there knowing the danger to his children?
Right, because he's an asshole. He's a bastard. You know? And that's what an awful, awful thing. So, yeah, he clearly knows. Because he says that he went there once. And kid says, well, did you stay there? And he said, of course not. Because he knew. He knew exactly what was going on. But, of course, what are you going to say? I mean, even in 1919, you know, most people are not going to believe in ghosts for real, you know?
Yeah. I suppose that does explain why the boss didn't seem like he wanted to press charges for the fire.
Right. I think the boss knows exactly what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's just a very creepy, creepy movie. Really well done. And of course, we have to touch on that scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's that scene. So this is when Kid has finally been rescued from the house where all the crazy shit's going on by Toomey, brought him back to the Covington Arms, and he goes to bed. And the first thing he does is he finds the little tin soldier under his pillow. And he starts hearing the kid. And that's when the kid, because remember, the kid was just saying, hello, hello. And this is the first time the kid says, it's for you. And then he looks up and all of a sudden, there's this horrible leering face where she's like, aah! And it's like getting closer and like inches from his face. And she's grinning and her eyes are red and black. And she just looks horrible, like right in your face.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering too. Is that the same ghost?
I think so.
The woman in black was wearing a hat, and this one wasn't.
Right. There are some differences, and that's a little weird. I'm not exactly sure why they chose to do it like that, because she is always in black and always has the hat. But on this particular occasion, I don't know. Maybe they just couldn't film it like that or something. But on this particular occasion, you get to see her hair, which was weird,
and it's gray.
Right.
Which does not seem to fit with somebody who presumably died young.
Right.
So that's why I thought that maybe it was the Mrs. Drablo trying to warn him or something.
Well, I mean, she has those awful red eyes and the black all around them, and her skin's really awful looking, so she probably didn't look like that when she died young either. So, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, ghosts tend to, I would think, if your whole point is to scare the shit out of somebody, you're going to go there looking as scary as you can, I presume. But the fact that she's like inches from his face, her horrible, leering, you know, smiling, malevolent face is right next to it is very unsettling. Mm-hmm. And he wigs out. He's like, ah!
And I don't blame him.
I know.
But then he like wakes up and then he develops the fever, which I guess begs the question, did that happen or was that a fever-induced
nightmare? You go. So, and it's funny because then it's like, well, to cover it up, does she make him sick or make him feverish? And is the both going on? Neither going on. It's a very ambiguous
thing. Did he just catch some bizarre virus that was preserved by the bog or something?
I hope not. I mean, I've never been sick and had those kind of dreams before. But yeah, I can tell you, the very first time I saw that, it freaked the living shit out of me. I mean, it scared me. I thought about it and I dreamed about it. It wigged me the hell out because it's just not an angle that you're used to seeing, you know? It's not really a jump scare in the traditional sense where it's accompanied by this sudden loud noise. You know, it's not the noise that gets you, although that's creepy too, but it's the fact that her face is right there and you didn't notice until you just looked over and it's been there, who knows, the whole time.
Yeah. Maybe it was sleep paralysis.
And there's maybe something of that too, although he didn't seem particularly paralyzed to me, but he kind of freaks out and goes under the covers and has a cry and a scream, as I think all of us would.
Yeah.
But that's the scare, or the scene, quote unquote, that most people talk about, and they don't want to give it away too much, because for those of you who haven't seen the movie, I guess they want them to still experience the shock of it. But I'm telling you, until you actually see it, you don't know what it means, and you know, you have to actually see it to believe it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's one of those things where traditional filmmaking or in the can special effects and et cetera, again, so much more superior than just CGI. You know, when in the remake, there was a lot of CGI fake looking ghost stuff. I mean, they look like CGI. I don't care how expensive it is. CGI looks like CGI, and because it does, the artifice kind of ruins the suspense. You already know that you're just seeing, you know, crap. You're seeing something false. You know, this is very different. This doesn't seem false at all. This is like in the flesh that you could touch, and you don't want to touch that.
Yeah, I've also had things where I woke up and there was a face right above mine.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure it really was just sleep paralysis in my case.
It wasn't me, I can tell you that.
So, basically, as a kid, I used to have a lot of trouble sleeping. Like, I think I got tested for narcolepsy and a few other things as a kid. Which actually involves a lot of sleep deprivation and then falling asleep in the doctor's office. It's not very fun.
Eek.
But, so I used to have a lot of trouble sleeping. I was pretty much an insomniac from around age 4. I still am one. But sometimes I'd fall asleep and I'd wake up and I wouldn't be able to move and there'd be a face hovering over mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wouldn't be able to move.
Yeah, that kind of a phenomenon has a physical explanation. And I think, I don't know, something like maybe a few percentage of the adult population actually has this. And it's probably one of the reasons why we have ghost stories throughout the years, because it's the only way people have been able to explain what it is that's going on.
Yeah.
I've never had that, but I have another condition that is also a certain percentage of the population has. When just before I go into REM sleep, I will hear sudden loud noises, or I'll hear my name, or I'll hear something call out. And I forget what it's called, but it's basically, it's your brain switching over from your normal consciousness to REM sleep when you start to dream. And for whatever reason, when it does that, it will manifest itself in a sudden loud noise. And of course, since I was a kid, it's been freaking the living hell out of me. I mean,
exploding head syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it's called. And that's exactly it.
It's like the weirdest name for a disorder ever.
And it's very true. That's exactly what it sounds like. It's like a sudden loud noise, or your name, or somebody's moaning or calling out something. And it's an awful feeling. But now that I know that this is an actual thing that a certain percentage of the population has, including myself, I know what it is. But it doesn't make it any less creepy when it happens. But
yeah,
again, it's the sort of thing that is probably why we have ghost tales. And I imagine that there are other things that happen there, because, you know, we don't really know all about our brains and about our consciousness or about sleep even. There's a whole lot about sleep we don't really know. What really happens to our brain when we're asleep? We don't really know exactly.
Yeah, like lucid dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or hallucinations, or anything in between. I mean, there's a whole other world out there that we only know little peeps, you know, we see through around the corners, but we don't really know what's going on. So because of all this uncertainty, people will explain it away as hauntings or ghosts or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Poltergeists.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Otherwise, I don't believe in ghosts at all. I see no physical mechanism or physical reason why it even should happen. So because I can't explain it in an empirical sense, I just have to discard it. But there could be other reasons or other things that make it look like there might be ghosts. I don't know.
Okay. Sounds like I need to get you a Pikachu.
I have plenty of stuffed creatures, as you have seen, and yeah, not a single one of them have done anything. Not even my chicken biscuit honking plastic chicken. Now, if he starts honking in the middle of the night, okay, I might start to worry. Fortunately, that has not happened yet. I don't know. I'm not sure what else to talk about this film. The acting is fabulous. Everybody's really, really good in it. Even though these are mostly BBC television actors, they're all really, really good.
So, the guy's last name was Kidd.
Right. And that...
It seems...
That is a change.
That's weirdly fitting that a child-killing ghost would be able to have such a strong effect on someone whose last name is Kidd.
Right, and before you got that, I was going to try to tell you, that is a name change. In the book and in the play, the guy is named Arthur Kipp, K-I-P-P. And as a matter of fact, as I remember reading, that was one of the issues that the writer, Susan Hill, had with the screenplay writer, Nigel Neal, is that he changed the name and that he made it in such a way that she thought was too obvious a connection between the kid in the movie or in the story with his last name and, of course, his own kid. So, yeah, without getting too much into the last name bit, his name would have been Kipp. And there's a couple other things, too. Apparently, the dog was not named Spider in the book. I don't recall what the dog was named, but apparently she didn't like the name of the dog, although I thought it was kind of cute because Toomey says, oh, when he was a pup, he was all hairy and just a bunch of legs. So it seemed to fit.
Well, I guess maybe the dog was named Spider in real life and they couldn't change the name because the dog wouldn't react.
Oh, that's possible too.
That seems like the best reason to change a dog's name in a movie because the actor doesn't respond to anything else.
Right. But overall, including the dog, the acting was very, very good. The direction was fabulous. I mean, this guy, I mean, he'd been doing TV movies on the BBC and other places, ITV, since the 50s. So you could tell he knew what he was doing. He knew how to pace the movie. He knew how to build tension. He knew how to create scares. I mean, real, genuine, creepy scares without having to have to rely on jump cuts and sudden noises. I mean, there are some sudden noises, but, you know, it's very, very different than the cheap stuff you see these days. No weird special effects other than what we talked about. The music, I thought, was really, really good. Very haunting, without being overbearing. And there's enough variety of it that it makes it seem, natural. The sets were all fantastic. I don't know where they found that place to shoot, but I loved that house as opposed to the house that was done in the remake. The one in the remake was kind of cool in and of itself, but for some reason, this house on this causeway surrounded by mist, it just made you feel a whole lot more isolated and cut off from the rest of the world.
Yeah. You know? The whole thing had a kind of Hound of Baskervilles feel to it.
Sure, definitely.
I guess because of the similar setting.
Mm-hmm. And, it's very, very Victorian, like early Victorian house. And it was absolutely stuffed with weird stuff. And maybe it didn't have the creepy monkey from the remake, but there were plenty of old creepy things there to begin with. I loved the old stylus style recorder and with the wax, the pre photograph.
I'd never seen one of those before. I thought it was a typewriter until he started talking into it.
I know. You generally never see those. They're not around. And even if there are, people don't know what they are. But that was cool as hell. That was neat to see. And there was just a lot of cool stuff. The details in the film really helped sell it, in addition to the acting and the way that it's shot and everything. It's really one of my favorite ghost stories. I want to say it's a slow burn because it's really kind of not. You're sort of out there pretty quickly. But there's a lot of subtlety that you see and that you don't see today in a lot of horror films. I mean, today's horror films, a lot of them, especially if they're Hollywood, it's blood and guts, it's jump scares, it's sudden noises, and you know, I'm just not that interested and I'm not affected and I'm not scared. This movie creeped the shit out of me. And I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not kidding when I said it scared me the first time I saw it. So, you know, it might be a little different from you. You're a Zoomer. Plus, you've gone through this own experience of yourself with real Pikachus and things. So maybe you didn't feel as scared as me when I first saw it. But you have to admit it was pretty creepy.
Yeah. Mm. Murderous ghosts, not a good thing.
No. Not a good thing. And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, I keep thinking to myself, if it were me, rather than running away, I would have gone up to confront, you know, the woman in black. But, of course, that's just going to make your doom come even faster because you get the sense that there's nothing you can do, you know, that you're up against something that is beyond what anybody could do.
Yeah. I suppose maybe salt and a good, you know, like how people say salt circles can protect you or contain a ghost or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Why salt?
I don't know. I guess because salt's usually white and it's considered pure. I'm not sure why.
You could use talcum powder. That's white and pure.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty big thing in, like, the Louisiana, New Orleans. Some people have chalk or salt circles, and people refuse to cross them without permission.
Interesting. I know the salt will keep slugs away and snails.
That might be part of it, too, then.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. Yeah, like I said, I don't really believe in ghosts or spirits or spooks, although it certainly makes life a lot more interesting. So, I don't know. Is there anything else about this film you want to touch on? Any other questions or confusions or things you want to talk about or things you really liked?
So, the little boy ghost, was he, like, forced to follow around the woman in black?
I don't know.
Or what kept him from moving on?
I don't know. I mean, what keeps any ghost from moving on, I suppose you could ask.
I guess also, why is there still a town there if everyone knows what's killing the children?
And I guess that's part of it, too. It's, you know, cognitive dissonance, willful ignorance. It's hard to tell. My main question is, who burns the house down and why?
Yeah, like, Arthur asks if it was him because he left the fire going. That's hard to say. Did somebody else burn it on purpose?
Did the woman in black do it? And if she did, what does that mean and why? I mean, you would think that might be one way of quote-unquote cleansing the ground and getting rid of the house. But at the same time, I think she's made it clear that she's not really associated with the house. The house was being haunted, quote-unquote, because the sister was there.
Yeah.
And then the solicitor was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That she's not tied to the house itself, which makes her even freaking creepier because then she could just go wherever you are. Like here, at my house, in your room, at night.
So we heard a story from one of the previous roommates, Tina. I hope she doesn't mind me mentioning her. Okay. And she said that there, like, when she was staying here, the closet door would shake and rattle on its own. And then one day she sat up and said, okay, whoever's there, please stop. And it stopped and it never came back. So maybe it was her cat. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a ghost. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know that it was Jasper. Jasper's a little too lazy about that. I can tell you that is the room where my father died. And I watched it happen. So who knows?
Oh. But yeah, the night after I heard that, I slept with the light on.
Yeah, I've noticed you've slept with the light on a few times. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, weird stuff. And, you know, you watch a movie like this and it brings it all out.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fire, I'm not really sure what to say about that. Other than, you know, it's just another example of the woman in black's rage, perhaps.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think we've done a good fair amount of work on this particular film, so I think it's about time we bring it to rest. So, if anybody out there is interested in seeing this film, the only thing I can tell you is go online, look around, maybe you'll get lucky like I did, and someone will have, you know, a master copy that they would copy for you, or maybe they could have a DVD or a VHS copy, or there might be a way to get a copy out there. I don't know who currently owns the rights to this, and I imagine if it does come out, it's probably going to be one of those Region 2 British DVDs or Blu-rays, but I really hope that it comes out in Blu-ray and then it comes out in an all-region Blu-ray, because that would be fabulous. I think more people need to see this film, which is why I've highlighted it in this program, because it's just a marvelous, creepy, wonderful ghost story that people really need to see, especially in this day and age. And it's just a shame that the only people who really know about it are the people who went and saw the to me, disappointing Daniel Radcliffe version, because I think this was much better. With that, I guess we will wrap up this show. Thank you all very, very much for watching, for listening. We are going to do a video of that and put it up on YouTube. We do that with all our episodes, but primarily listening. This is a podcast primarily. Thank you again, and please join us next time when we do another cool, creepy classic for Forgotten Horror Classics. All right, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.